Hello and welcome to a very special series of My Happy Mind Conversations, where we are talking to some of our incredible schools across the UK who use My Happy Mind. You have heard me talking about the power of My Happy Mind, the impact that we have, for a long time. And I thought it was about time that you heard it directly from the schools who are teaching the programme. So dive in to this incredible series and enjoy. Hello and welcome to another episode of My Happy Mind Conversations, where I am talking to one of, if not the most wonderful head teacher in the land, Nick Wetton, who has been using My Happy Mind in a couple of different schools for over 6 years now. So she is one of our longest standing head teachers and is such an inspiring leader. She's worked in inner city schools and in more rural schools as well, but in both settings has seen My Happy Mind have an incredible impact on the children and the parents and the entire school community. So let's dive in and hear from Nick. So would we be able to start by you just introducing who you are, what your role is, and then tell us a little bit about your school?
So my name is Nick Wetton. I'm currently head teacher at Malthorpe Primary School in Cheshire-Preston, Chester, which is a 1.5 form entry primary school in a farming community, in quite a small farming community, and relatively isolated in terms of links and transport links and so on. And that's very much in contrast to my previous school, where I was head teacher, which was a city school, a lot higher level of a different demographic in terms of deprivation, higher level of need. And I think that's where my journey started with My Happy Mind. And getting to meet you for the first time, Laura, being introduced to the programme, and for me, an absolute essential part of the curriculum that's offered to children in both of these schools has been the My Happy Mind curriculum.
Amazing, thank you so much. So if we think about going back to your previous school then, when you first kind of were introduced to My Happy Mind back in 2021, I think it was, which sounds like forever ago, doesn't it? What kind of inspired you to bring My Happy Mind into your school?
So I had a number of children in school who were really struggling, to be honest, and children's development and expression of that often tends to be in quite significant and dysregulated behaviours. And I felt very reactionary, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
So we reacted at the point of need and the point of those behaviours, and that felt very, very wrong. So what My Happy Mind provided for me and the potential when I first heard you speak, Laura, was the potential to stop being reactionary and start being proactive. And, you know, mental health cuts across all genders, all nationalities, all ages. And for me, that the crucial part of this programme is that we are starting with children from nursery age and above, providing them with the understanding and the vocabulary to be able to express what they were feeling, what they were going through, to understand the science behind their feelings and emotions, and give them the ability to articulate that and therefore prevent significant mental health issues in the future. So that was kind of, that was why I was hooked from the word go, if you like.
Amazing. So how would you describe the kind of before My Happy Mind and then after My Happy Mind picture then in both of the schools?
I think the before Happy Mind picture was reactionary.
Yeah.
It was children who, there's some children who have the support, who still occasionally have those significant behaviours, but there were far more than that was necessary. So beforehand, we had any children who were having a dip or not understanding feelings and emotions, had a significant life event or even a minor life event, and they would react in a significant manner to those issues because that was their expression. Some children turn inward and they go quiet and they withdraw, or the children explode and get very angry and they're just not able to cope with the feelings inside them. So it presents itself in many different ways. So it was a school with children at both ends of those spectrum. It was a staff body who were very much like, this is getting out of control. Where do we go? It's getting worse. How do we cope and manage with this? What's the answer? And I think post the training, we had My Happy Mind training, we had assemblies with the children, we had the program rollout. And when we started to see the impacts of the program, the post My Happy Mind picture, if you like, although not post, the ongoing picture is very much a picture of those children who have now got the skills, who've now got the language to articulate, who now know what to do when they hit that inevitable mental health dip. They have got the strategies, they've got the skills, they've got the language to express and share with staff what they need.
Yeah.
And that is a very, very different picture. And you've also got, you know, we've talked a lot about the children, but you've also got a staff that understand it and that have the skills to enable the children to go through the process, but actually to know exactly what each individual child's needs are. They're all different, but have a whole range of strategies with a shared common language, which is really important, that those staff can draw upon. So I think the impact is, you know, it's fundamental for me as a school leader. You know, if we go back to a curriculum standpoint, you know, we teach a whole range of things in our curriculum that children may use. and if I'm cynical, we'll never use outside the classroom. And we spend a lot of time and there's lots of testing around some of those things. But actually, we know every single person will hit a time in their life where they need to draw on the strategies and have strong mental health. And we know that. We know that's going to happen. And actually, if we don't teach that, I think we are really failing in our duties as school leaders.
No, that's really helpful. So if you think about the programme then, what would you say are some of your favourite things about what's actually in the programme?
I love the science and I love the language that comes with the science. And there is nothing better than hearing a child talk about their hippocampus, their amygdala, their prefrontal cortex, just talking about it as if it's part of their everyday language. I mean, that for me makes me beam. The characters that go alongside it, I have my little my yellow hap in the corner behind me, and that's just recognised throughout school, so it's so accessible, and the children love it. And I mean, I could go on and on, but I think they're the crucial things for me.
Yeah, fab. And what would you say are some of your kind of favourite stories, whether from your previous school or from your current school, in terms of some of the specific impacts it's had with maybe staff members or parents or children themselves? Have you got any kind of stories of real impact that you wanted to share?
Yeah, I think there's a number. There's so many I could draw on. I think one that stands out is a child saying to me in quite strained tones, I'm in my amygdala, and me going, okay, so this child needs time and space and me to absolutely back off. But for a child to know that and understand that, and for all staff to now be able to recognise that immediately and have that understanding that that child needs a minimum of 20 minutes before that brain starts to function correctly, to be able to make the right choices. Quite often in the past, you would see staff jumping in, giving a child choices when they're sitting at their amygdala and then it exploding further, or then causing that child to then display a different flight or freeze or response. So that particular memory sticks out for me. And just going, wow, you know, how powerful is that? How amazing is that? But even in their amygdala, for them to be able to find that language and say, yeah, I need some space. So that's one particular one. Another one is a story where a parent came in. She'd had a really tough time and was trying to keep as much as she could away from her family. But her little son came in the room And she was crying, and the child said, "Mummy, are you in your amygdala?" So it's two
Oh.
amygdala stories. And actually she then said, "I giggled," which kind of, changed the mood. And, he was being gorgeous and lovely and gave her a big hug. But then I suppose the other end of that spectrum is a parent who was really struggling with a child with significant behaviours at home. So sort of really, aggressive type behaviours, and that was physically how they were demonstrating their distress. And that the parent using, they go off and they huff and puff, and but now I understand that that's the start of them happy breathing.
Wow.
And the children just saying, I need to happy breathe, and the mum sharing with me that that's a strategy that she now recognises, and they use that terminology as a family, and
Wow.
them kind of being woven in, I think is just really powerful.
Yeah, that's incredible. Thank you for sharing those. Do you find that for those children, obviously, kind of in these post-COVID years, we've seen huge increases in SEMH needs, huge increases in more children being diagnosed with SEN needs as well. Do you feel like the program helps those children as well as your kind of mainstream children too?
Absolutely, it has significant impact, and I think, yeah, I mean, post-COVID, higher levels of SEND, increased difficulty in social interaction,
Yeah.
struggling with friendship groups is something that we're seeing more and more for children and young people. I think, at the very sort of sharp end of that spectrum is the number of children who sort of when they move to high school, we've got that level of self-harm. And then, it's in the news regularly, and it's in our communities regularly, particularly male suicides, in the early 20s is very prevalent. That's the worst outcome. And I think if we as primary schools and schools in general provide this curriculum as an absolute necessity, and if it was recognised, at government level, at Department for Education level, that and it is to a greater extent than it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and certainly 10 years ago. But if that was a fundamental and legal part of the curriculum, then the stress on the NHS and on CAMHS, for example, you would hope would be reduced.
Yeah.
So I think those the children who are at the more have more extreme needs in terms of neurodiversity and mental health, they have those if they have those strategies already, if they practice those techniques, if they have a really secure understanding of the core principles in terms of the care module, then they have the underpinnings of getting out of that dip or
Yeah.
supporting themselves and that self-help. And sometimes they need reminders, and regularly they do, but quite a lot of, for our children, their SEND plans and their support plans and their it involves the techniques and involves reminding them and
Yeah.
providing frameworks for them to revisit, their own character strengths and their achievements and their goals, and going back to their list of things that they in the past when it's really bad and they're in that dip of what they've been grateful for and they can be in the future. And I think that only helps. It only helps and strengthens.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you. So we talked a bit about before your kind of love of us using the science and the big words like hippocampus and amygdala and prefrontal cortex. Why do you think that bringing that kind of science perspective into schools through the program is so important?
I think providing children and staff with the concrete and the science things that cannot be disputed
Yeah.
is a great platform. It's a great place for the children to start. I think one of the huge issues as you're growing up, and I think even as an adult, that people tend to reflect on when they're struggling is, why is everybody else coping and I'm not? Why is everybody else sitting in that lesson and I can't keep still? Why can people cope with changes or cope with this situation with a friendship, but I can't? So understanding that everybody's brain to a certain extent, those three parts of the brain and you know, the prehistoric nature of our amygdala, having that understanding makes them feel, you know what, it's okay. My brain is responding in the way it should. And having that understanding, the science underpinning everything, I think, gives the reassurance and the concrete evidence, really, for the tools and the strategies that go above that and provide the security, I think, and make children feel like it's okay. You know, it's okay to be at me. And then the strategies to help them support them through those times.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And what about for staff? Do you think it... Yeah, because one of the things that often schools say to us when they're exploring My Happy Mind as an option for them is, oh, you know, the staff don't have time, that we can't give them anything else. Do you think that the curriculum kind of supports with that challenge in terms of how it's structured and how it's used in schools?
Yeah, so in terms of relationships, that's part of our statutory curriculum. So My Happy Mind is aligned with a relationship curriculum and covers that. So therefore, there is the time, and statutorily, there is the need to do all of those things. So I think, you know, that's certainly the argument I would use. And then the other side of that is, as I would say, you can't afford not to do this in the curriculum, because teachers are always saying, when a child's not coping and they're taken away for children who can't cope at that time, they lose learning time because they might be dealing with low level or high level behaviours or distressed behaviours. And therefore, to have children who aren't at that place, or to have support staff who understand that and have that common language and that shared understanding, actually gives you time back in the curriculum. And also involving the families and giving them the understanding too means that the good work continues at home, and that understanding is shared at home. So those practices go beyond the classroom into the home. The impact of that is massive. So from a curriculum point of view and a time point of view, we can't afford not to do it.
Yeah, great.
Over the years that I've had My Happy Mind in school, and it be so important, I think staff who are sceptical or who say, you know, we spend too much time on mental health, and we give it too much emphasis, so everybody then has a mental health issue, is one of the arguments I might have heard. I think they stay with you on the journey, and they see the impact of that distressed child who regularly struggles with their behaviour. They see the impact of My Happy Mind on that, and they come with you because they can see it over time. And I think then there's no, and the point at which I was in my previous school when I left there, and the point I am at my current school, is that there's no resistance to doing this within the curriculum, because everybody understands its worth.
Yeah, great. So what would you say then to other schools who might be listening to this, or who might have been exploring My Happy Mind, if they're kind of on the fence, they're not sure? What would be your kind of parting words to them?
I think morally, I think it's our duty to society to support children to be young adults who can cope with life. And that's a huge statement. And post-COVID, I suppose, it's even bigger. And I think that, yes, we want all of our children to leave with really high standards of reading, writing and math. Will that ever save their life? To a certain extent, not. But actually then having an understanding of what strong mental health can look like and how to return to that absolutely could have a significant impact on them coping with adverse childhood experiences or trauma that inevitably comes in everybody's life, and their resilience. So morally, we can't afford not to do this programme and have it absolutely embedded in everything we do. In terms of curriculum, the time and the space is there, and you can create that within the curriculum. It's part of what we need to do. And My Happy Mind does the job really well for us within the curriculum.
Amazing. Thank you so much. I so hope that you've enjoyed these conversations and they've given you a little bit of insight into the work we do here at My Happy Mind. Now, if you are a parent or a school and you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh my goodness, we want to learn more about how My Happy Mind could help us in our school, I want to encourage you to go to myhappymind.org/schools. That's myhappymind.org/schools. And here you'll find a link to a video tour so you can learn more about the programme and an easy way to book a call with one of our team who can tell you more about the programme and see if it's right for you. Now, if you're listening to this as somebody who works in a local authority or maybe the NHS and you're interested in learning more about the work we do on a commissioned basis, then go ahead and visit myhappymind.org/NHS. That's myhappymind.org/NHS. And of course, you can find out more about our work by finding us on social media. At My Happy Mind is where you'll find us. And of course, everything you need to know is also on our website, myhappymind.org. Thanks for tuning in. Please give me a review if you found these podcast episodes useful. It's always good to get feedback from you, and it helps us to do more of these episodes as well. So thanks for tuning in. Take care, and bye for now.